Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ed Ackerley. Jump in Tucson is a unique format show with different hosts covering a wide range of topics. On Monday, I host Wonder, talking about the good things happening at the University of Arizona. On Tuesday, General Ted Maxwell hosts the Engagement Hour. On Wednesday, our good friend Grant Kruger hosts Restaurants and Politics. And then Thursday, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance talks about visitor attractions and other cool things that are going on in Tucson. And then here on Fridays, we talk about great success stories in businesses and in organizations in Tucson. A reminder, if you would still like to help by making a donation to the Boys and Girls Club, you can do so by making a donation at any Jersey Mike's between now and end of day Sunday. And if you're a company and you'd like to make a more substantial donation, encourage you to contact Joe Henry at the Jersey Mike's. He's the district manager at the Jersey Mike's, and he offices out of Irvington and I-19. So if you're interested in helping us with the Jersey Mike's a month of giving and helping all the Boys and Girls Clubs in Tucson, all their proceeds from last Wednesday went to the Boys and Girls Club, and they're still collecting donations. So if you're interested, give a shout out to Joe Henry at Jersey Mike's. Also want to let you know that Pat Hirsch is having a yard sale for Track of Tucson. This is happening today and tomorrow. You can give her a call at 520-334-7900. She's been doing some yard sales to benefit Track. Track is the riding program that helps youth and others with horses, and a great program. If you haven't seen that or been part of that, it's great. She has a yard sale out of the northwest part of Tucson. Give her a call, Pat Hirsch, at 520-334-7900. Well, today we're going to talk about communication and talk about small business advocacy and other cool things that are happening in Tucson. Our guest this morning is Lydia Aranda. She is the chairperson of the Minority and Small Business Alliance of Southern Arizona. That's just one of about 86 hats that Lydia wears in Tucson. She's an amazing person. Good morning, Lydia. How are you?
Good morning, Ed. It's my pleasure to be here.
I should say, bienvenidos a Tucson, al KVOA radio. Es muy importante. We should be speaking a little bit of Espanol here today, too.
Always, always. Bienvenido a todos, all of the listeners.
Yeah. Well, before we get talking a little bit about the minority and small business and other things, you know, we met years ago. Actually, I walked right up to you at an event and talked to you, and a short time after that, you were consulting with one of our clients. You were speaking in my classroom at the University of Arizona, talking to my students about communication. So in a nutshell, your banking experience, your ambassadorial experience, your communication experience, if you could just give us a 2 or 3 minutes of Lydia's background of that journey that you've taken over the last couple of years.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I have to say, my family roots come from Southern Arizona, very proud of it. My father born and raised in Nogales, Arizona, and my mother born and raised in Tucson. So my brother and I know Southern Arizona as home. For our family, we actually grew up in the valley in Tempe and Phoenix, and so it's been very much a statewide view of everything that I've experienced in my career and in my personal life that brings the best of all corners of Arizona together. In my professional career, many, many years in private sector, corporate America, and then early before even coming to be a U of A pre-med student way back in the day, I had a fantastic experience with the U.S. Embassy to Uruguay, working with the Social Secretary's Office to the Ambassador's Residence, and learning through various internships about international business, international banking, diplomacy, and other aspects that have really carried forth throughout my career and have helped put me in touch with different contacts and learn different ways and styles of communication. And I think quite at its most fundamental place, that's what informed me to ultimately earn my degree in intercultural communication. So back to that later, but from private sector, I went into public service with an appointment to state government as the Arizona Small Business Advocate, and running the then Arizona Department of Commerce Small Business Services office, and also being able to work closely with the governor's office in two capacities, as an appointment of the executive director of the governor's council on small business. And that is really what has kept, I have to say, the bug really bit me, not only in public service, but really in a focus of a better understanding at a very core level of what entrepreneurs and those organizations and corporations that support them, how that role of alliance and support is a mutual directive and a very strong relationship. And it also informed how to communicate a little bit better. I very much enjoy coming to your class. Yeah, it's been many years now. And what I take away from that are all the great ideas that are happening from the students and their perspectives of what communication means today. Lots of different modes and channels, and I take that back into my consulting. I take that back into the ideas that I get to share with fellow business leaders or elected officials when we look for solutions for our great Southern Arizona and how we tackle economy, workforce, and wellness.
Right. You know, the students at the U of A, you come and speak to my communication and leadership course, and the students at the U of A are fascinated by your pedigree and the great experience that you've had, and the one thing that stands out there, their interest in you being at the ambassador's residence and working in Uruguay about and just working in the State Department and so forth. And in fact, one of my other classes has a project with the United States government, with the Department of Homeland Security, you know, and they don't think about that level of government service as an opportunity for them getting their degree and so forth. They just don't think about it. They think about private sector only. They think about Google and Facebook, and they want to go work at these big giant companies in these big cities and so forth. And when you come in and you start talking about the experience that they can get at these amazing places all around the world, it's pretty cool for them. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
So I met you, I walked up to you at an event, and I congratulated you on your career and so forth. But one of the things that fascinated me was your time at the bank and Wells Fargo, and being kind of a regional person helping small business and advocating and giving out money, actually grants, which was a nice thing to do. I'll take one of those, by the way. So your time there was pretty powerful because it gave you that regional approach to solving local problems, correct?
Very much so. I was part of what at that time was a new approach to servicing community by bridging retail banking support, which is usually talked about as marketing or advertising, those kinds of things, and the investment the bank does in getting out and about with its messaging and connecting with banking customers. The second leg of that stool, of course, community relations and community giving. I was able to connect with our leaders in Arizona, and I had a 4-state region, so leaders in all of those states who were responsible for their philanthropic giving, and be able to work and strategize about how to support that more into all aspects in different communities. The diversity of each state was very important, and being able to look at that kind of investment as well. And then the third leg were federal programs and what we call community development initiatives, and helping to support and amplify. My role very much was never the final decision maker, but always in conjunction with state presidents, the other executives who were in charge of those departments and divisions, and being able to collaborate with them and then communicate in what was coming in from community, as well as then communicate out as a spokesperson of why the priorities of the bank at that time or the region at that time, and why we were choosing and selecting to make those kind of investments. And we always looked at it as an investment in community.
Amen.
not as we weren't check writers. We wanted to be involved in the success of whatever initiative and be a good partner.
That's great. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how you're doing that, communicating locally and working locally with small business from the border to north of Tucson and even into the valley. We were just up at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce National Conference up there just a few short months ago. We'll come back in just a minute. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We're with Lydia Randa, the chairperson of the Minority and Small Business Alliance of Southern Arizona. We are on Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, and our guest this morning is Lydia Randa. She is the chairperson of the Minority and Small Business Alliance of Southern Arizona. You know, Lydia, back in the fall, I had the good fortune of showing up out at Casino del Sol for a little get together there, where you were awarding scholarships and talking about small business and how the minority businesses, but all businesses in Tucson, can support education and support all the good things that are going on. Tell us a little bit about the Minority and Small Business Alliance, and talk a little bit about the gala that's actually coming up in November again, of what you do and how you raise scholarships for young people.
You bet. Thanks so much. At the Small Business Alliance of Southern Arizona, we first of all are very excited that 2024 represents 30-year anniversary.
It's congratulations.
A big thank you. It's a big milestone for all of us. This organization was started by executives and small business people who advocate for small business, know about supplier diversity, absolutely understand procurement challenges, support challenges, business plans and such, and was started by leaders at Raytheon, right here in Tucson, Joanne Arvizu and several other executives from other walks of life have been part of this for all of that time. And I would be remiss to not talk a little bit about our current board who have built up over the years. We have representatives statewide, Ricardo Carlo from the AMCA, the Minority Contractors Association. We have realtors like Rich Pesqueda. We have had for many years attorneys, Michael Boreal, and many other folks who have come to participate as volunteers.
I just got a text from Roman Camposano.
Roman Camposano is one of our newer board members who has joined in to give the perspective of someone who has worked with chambers, who has worked with small businesses, who is from the insurance and related industries. So we are very excited to be a full volunteer board. We don't have buildings or staff or any of those kinds of things. We've kept our overhead very low. And our mission is to support entrepreneurs and those wanting to become small businesses, and that includes students.
I have to correct you. You said you don't have buildings. I want to correct you because I was at a lunch 2 days ago where the person who is in charge of that building said, you have a home and you can come there whenever you want. It was great to see you and your board have your monthly meeting at the Tucson Arizona Boys Chorus. Of course, my brother's the director, and they've just started their 85th observance of their 85th year, and it was nice to have your organization come in and hear a little bit about the Boys Chorus, and then also talk about what the recruiting possibilities are for both board members for the Boys Chorus, but also engagement by businesses who might want to support the chorus. So thank you for that. And you're welcome, I guess. Hey, quoting my brother, you're welcome at the Boys Chorus anytime you want to come.
Well, thank you. And you're right. What I should say, we don't have overhead of owning or leasing and building. What we do purposefully and very intentionally is we get out and about, and not only in Tucson, but all across Pima County and into other counties as well. We, our focus, our footprint, if you will, are all seven counties of Southern Arizona. And
Graham, Greenlee, Santa Cruz,
Yuma County, Pinal County, and Cochise, as well as Pima. So our focus has been, again, on putting on workshops, trainings, being a resource of information and referral. We are not a membership organization. Rather, we are there as a resource to community, and also want to continue to be a resource to the corporations and fellow nonprofits that support small business as well. In that, it's for 21 years, we've been very proud to be giving out college scholarships to undergrad and graduate level students from all across Southern Arizona in a number of fields. And throughout all of that time, the one thing we really focus on or have learned is that writing is one of those things that is very, that can be a challenge for entrepreneurs, for students alike, and really for other organizations. So we try to be also a help and a service. Myself in particular was brought on to say, how do we communicate a little bit better? What do we do with messaging? And how do we help folks learn how to write their story a little bit better as well?
Yeah, that's great. You know, the gala that I went to, what also was amazing to me was the number of corporations and larger companies that were there supporting the smaller businesses that were giving away the scholarship. So you had Raytheon and some of the other larger employers in Arizona.
Sure, Southwest Gas.
Yeah.
We've had support from the universities, from Tucson Airport over the years. Some of the Arizona Complete Health has been in our group, and many, many others. Certainly the casino itself, Casino del Sol, is always very supportive of things that help students and entrepreneurs. And the idea is also that the money, the proceeds that are raised, not only help small businesses, but again, or excuse me, not only help scholarships, but they go into programs and workshops and learnings for small businesses that help make their business stronger or help connect them into the industry and other mentors that that will help amplify their business as well.
And I'm a big proponent of giving scholarships to students who are from the area, who will stay in the area and build businesses here in Southern Arizona and all the counties that you've talked about, because many times, you know, not that it's bad, but we give scholarships to students and then they go off and take off and run off to some other city and do well. But they're always Wildcats or Pima College Aztecs or whatever they are. But it's great to have minority small business people giving scholarships to students who will probably stay in the region and help the region grow, because, you know, obviously, education and small business go together hand in hand.
They really do, and I think our state, like many other states, are facing challenges in how to approach what to do with workforce going forward, how to encourage and enhance folks to come to Arizona, or those that are here to stay in Arizona, and build their businesses here, upscale their own skill sets, to be that skilled workforce that we are proud of and that we need, and the different kinds of industry that are all across Southern Arizona, the rural communities, agricultural, mining, borderlands region, retail businesses, leading industry businesses, suppliers and vendors to make those other corporations run. All of that comes together, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention musicians, artists, singers, you know, all the kind of folks that help enhance the wonderful art and culture of art, which includes certainly gastronomy.
Absolutely.
All of that comes together. There are also a lot of folks who are looking at the improvement to regulation. So that's where the advocacy and understanding what happens in the economy of entrepreneurism and where we can help be a voice as well.
Education and advocacy in terms of working with the municipalities and with state government and county governments to help build up businesses and help them be successful. And it's hard enough to make payroll every month. It's even harder to try to do that in the face of governance and so forth. So helping educate those folks. So tell me, Lydia Aranda, as chairman of the Minority and Small Business Alliance of Southern Arizona, how would someone get involved if they were a small business and they maybe wanted to become an advocate with you, or if they were, you know, want to find out more about the scholarship program, how would they get in touch with Lydia Aranda?
Well, two different ways. First of all, our website for the organization is as in multicultural, as in minority, as in music, as in mindful. It is msbasa.org. And there are lots of information there about our past programs, photos about our events in the past, and also a hot button to click if they would like to donate on the spot.
Right.
They can feel free to also reach me at lydia.aranda@msbasa.org.
Great. And you're going to be speaking to some fine students at the University of Arizona coming up in a couple of weeks. You'll be talking about communication and leadership in your experience. And then you're going to join us on April 17th when the New York Times best-selling author, John Gordon, will be in Tucson. Well, he'll actually be speaking to my students, and you're going to be one of the guests, since you speak to my students. I've invited you to come to that because our students love to have you on the campus and to talk to them about your perspective. And I don't mean to be patronizing here, but it's good for them to hear from a woman who's successful in business. We have quite a few of those. But it's also important that they hear from a minority successful entrepreneur and a successful person in corporate and political and advocacy. And so it's great to have you with General Ted Maxwell and Grant Kruger and other people that come in and speak to my classes. It's great to have you too.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I think as we wrap up Women's History Month, it's always a pleasure to be out and be able to speak as a woman of color, as a very proud multi-generational Arizonan. And we'd love to tell people more. Please get in touch because we've got lots of exciting things happening in the grant writing space.
Yeah, well, we had kind of a conversation earlier about we'll have more of your board members from the MSBA.
SA.org.
That's a mouthful. Well, thank you, Lydia Ronda, for joining us and the good work you do in Southern Arizona. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors in the news, and you're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI Radio.
Thanks so much. Have a great holiday.
Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am Ed Ackerley, your host, and you know, this show talks about fun, cool, great things that are going on in Tucson, including family activities and things that just make our community great. In my run for mayor this past time when I ran, I made a significant effort to go around to churches in Tucson and meet with pastors and meet with congregations and share my view for what I think Tucson should be and could be and hopefully is moving in that direction. And one of the great introductions I got was to Pastor Brent Armstrong at Tucson Baptist. And I remember going into your office, Brent, and having you basically interview me and make sure that my beliefs and the things that I was trying to do for Tucson aligned with what you are trying to do with your folks at your church. And so welcome, Pastor Brent Armstrong from Tucson Baptist.
Well, good morning, Ed. It is a privilege to be with you. And I still remember that time you came to my office and said you were running for mayor. And then the multiple times we met after that, and you stopped at the church. You have always been so kind and gracious, and I just thank you for that.
Well, we appreciate what you do at the church. And, of course, Pastor Abel, who was a great guy, he came to a couple. We had quite a few activities when I was running that involved Hispanic churches and Hispanic pastors, and he was acted as my translator a couple of times as we were doing some things, and he is a wonderful young man.
Oh, he is a great, great pastor to our Spanish, and it's just grown greatly over this past year, and I'm so grateful to be able to serve alongside him there at Tucson Baptist.
So your church is located over in the middle part of town, kind of by Reed Park. It's at Columbus, just south of 22nd, between 22nd and 29th. Big facility. It's a big facility. It has classrooms and courtyards and two churches, actually. And so tell us a little bit about the history of your church and how it's been part of the fabric of Tucson.
Absolutely. In 1958, a man by the name of Lewis Johnson, he came from Texas over to Tucson, and he started Tucson Baptist Temple right there on Columbus. The first 2 years it met in an elementary school, and then they mm-hmm. built the what we call the Spanish Chapel, right, which was the original auditorium. It still stands and very close to the way it was designed and there in 1960. And anyway, Pastor Johnson, he wanted to pastor Tucson. And so he would knock on 100 doors a day, just introducing himself and Tucson Baptist Temple. And he actually pastored 50 years there at Tucson Baptist Temple.
Wow. And it's a beautiful facility. And the newer church, the one that you do most of the English services in, is also just a beautiful facility.
It is remarkable that in 1976, he had such a vision to build a building that is just as modern today, and it was certainly leading architectural building in 1976, but we have a beautiful auditorium that goes all the way back to 1976, and that's because of Pastor Johnson and his insights.
You and your wife, how long have you been pastor of the church? And
we have been here 15 years. And when you talk about the history of Tucson Baptist Temple as it was started, and then we changed the name several years ago to Tucson Baptist Church, Shelley and I, that's my wife, we've been here 15 years, and in the history of our church, we've only had two pastors, Pastor Johnson for 50 years, and I've been here 15 years and 1 year without a pastor while they were searching for the new pastor.
Right. And there's so much that goes on at your facility, and both with the Hispanic outreach and ministry, but also with the English speaking. And of course, there's the regular Sunday services, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are literally hundreds of activities that go on in the course of a year that you have there.
That is true. We've developed over these past 15 years, we have a Tucson Baptist preschool, and it continues to grow and thrive. And then we started Tucson Baptist Academy. That's right. Kindergarten through eighth grade. It's just growing, and the Lord's blessing there. It's it's really amazing to serve students. And we have a Bible Institute with students, and then just a lot of family activities. We're trying to reach one family at a time there, right, at Tucson Baptist.
Summer activities for kids as well?
Absolutely. We have what we call a kids camp, a summer kids camp that's available, and it's all 12 weeks of summer, and they have activities like going to the zoo, mm-hmm, Reed Park Zoo, or water activities, or bowling, skating, and we just, again, try to meet the needs of families who mom and dad still need to work.
Right.
And they need some place for the children to go during the summertime.
And it's safe, and it's convenient, and it's clean, and it's a great spirit and camaraderie. And of course, your Hispanic outreach is second to none. That's amazing how many people come from all over Tucson to come to services there on Sunday morning.
You are right. Pastor Abel has just done a marvelous job. He's been here over 6 years, and in that time, the ministry has grown by more than 100, and we can't wait to see what happens on Easter Sunday. We may have as many as 300 people in our Spanish services on Sunday, and he and the leadership he's developed among the Spanish is just remarkable. I'm so thankful, again, to be able to serve alongside him.
I have to say that the couple of times I went to the Hispanic service, I can speak a little bit of Spanish. I can speak probably a little more than the average person, but the music, oh my goodness, the music that they play at the Spanish services, mm-hmm, is amazing. They had a great bunch of musicians and talented people that are singing. It makes it really lively and exciting.
Absolutely. Many times I'll go over to the Spanish chapel, and I do not understand the Spanish language. What does happen is through the music, I certainly understand the music, and it communicates, and it's just a blessing to see what the Lord's doing there.
One time we were there, you spoke, you preached at the Sunday service in the Hispanic facility, and you spoke English, and Pastor Abel translated for you, and it was great. It was fantastic to hear you preach, and it's just a very inspirational place. I'm really excited about it. Well, there's lots of good things going on. Tell us a little bit about the future of evangelization, and you know, over the past, I would say maybe decade or two, well, the 15 years that you've been the pastor there, the temperature of the country has kind of changed a little bit. Even in our own backyards. Especially during COVID, there was an excuse to not have to go to church, and trying to get people to come back to church after COVID. It's a tough management position for you as a pastor of a large congregation to try to wrap your arms around all that.
It is in some respects, but we welcome those challenges. COVID obviously was a challenge, but we just made determination we were not going to close during COVID, mm-hmm, and we did a lot of unique things. We had drive-in services, right, where we had a radio station, and we would broadcast to their cars when there was all of these restrictions from spacing. We did live stream. So we did a lot of creative things during COVID, but post-COVID, we found there were really two types of people. There were people that were still afraid to come to church, and then there were families that were dying to get out of home. And so we've tried to reach those families and those couples that are looking for a warm home,
right,
and church environment, and we've tried to minister and reach out to them.
I'll say three interesting things. One is when you go and park there, especially on a Sunday, and you're an old guy like me, up comes a 8-passenger little cart that says, "Do you want to ride over to the facility?" Which you don't see that in many churches. You know, you got to hoof it quite a ways,
yes,
and that's just, and the people that operate that are just so hospitable and welcoming and so forth. Then when you walk into the church, oh my goodness gracious! Especially me, I'm pretty obvious. I'm a tall, interesting-looking guy, and so it was amazing to me.
Always well-dressed, I might say.
Yeah, how many people came over and introduced themselves to me over and over again, both in the main facility and over in the Hispanic facility. But I think one of the coolest things you have Absolutely, is the coffee bar out in the courtyard. That just is amazing to me. You're serving up better than Starbucks, as they say.
Well, actually, we make no money on our court. We call it Courtyard Cafe. We make no money on it because I'm always giving. I find excuses to give away drinks, and our staff just rolls their eyes. But I'll have my secretary make up coupons, and I'll just hand out free drinks, and then our staff just like we're never going to break even. Yeah. What I find, it's a connection point.
Oh, it's amazing.
And it doesn't matter if it's Spanish or English, or we have multiple nationalities in our church. It's a place for everyone to have a cup of hot tea or a cold drink there, and they sit around all the picnic tables and planners, and they just visit between services. So it's a great connection point.
I've been to over the last two and a half years, I've probably been to almost 100 churches, I would say, maybe more than 100 churches. And the hospitality and the spirit of community that just emanates from your congregation is amazing and welcoming to all peoples. And it's just very, very cool. And that coffee, I mean, you can't go wrong there with talking to somebody that you have never met before over a cup of coffee. My experience, me and Elvani Diaz were there, and it was amazing how restful that was and how
wonderful
cool it was. So, well, when we come back, we'll talk about this great event that you have coming up for Easter. Of course, today is Good Friday, and Easter is Sunday. So we'll talk a little bit about a great event that you have coming up tomorrow for families. And we're talking with Pastor Brent Armstrong from Tucson Baptist Church. And you're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We were busy chatting, so I'm back. Hey, we're with Pastor Brent Armstrong, 15 years now as pastor of Tucson Baptist Church, a great facility, great congregation, just a lovely, caring community. One of the cool things that you've done for the last several years is celebrate Easter, and of course, as today is Good Friday, and you have a pretty big plans for 10:30 on Easter Sunday, a big Easter celebration at church. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. On Sunday, we can't wait. In both our English and Spanish churches, we at 10:30 on Sunday morning have just a wonderful program planned. In the English side, we have our choir will have a special music program, and I'm doing something different. Usually I preach a message at the end after the music, but I'm actually dividing up my message into three parts, and so the choir sings, I give the first part of the message, choir sings, I give the second part of the message, choir sings. So we're doing a couple different things on Easter, and I just can't wait to be able to speak. And Easter is something that we celebrate, and that is that the Lord did, he rose again, and that's a celebration point for us as Christians, and we make no bones about that. We're certainly excited to celebrate that.
Right, and you'll have a similar service on the Hispanic side.
That is correct. At 10:30 in our Spanish chapel and 10:30 in our English main auditorium.
Fantastic. And then tomorrow there's going to be just what I think is one of the coolest events. Many people maybe have heard about it or actually got one of these cards that we're holding in our hands on their door. You do a lot of evangelization through this activity. You call it Easter Extravaganza. And tell us a little bit about the genesis of this program and what it's all about for families and kids.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak about our extravaganza. So several years ago, we started an Easter egg hunt at Reed Park. And we started with 20,000 eggs. And we just thought that was amazing. This year, 2024, it's grown to 50,000 eggs. And if I could just tell you, on Sunday, this past Sunday evening, we had hundreds of people gathered together in our gymnasium, and we literally stuffed 50,000 eggs with candy and preparing for tomorrow. And anyway, so what happens tomorrow at 10 o'clock at Reed Park, we have divided up by age groups, and we have We'll have hundreds of people in purple shirts mm-hmm. that everybody can tell who our staff is. And we just want to make it a fun day for the children of Tucson. And so if someone wants to bring their children, they can register at tucson.church and register for that extravaganza. Now, the activities start at 9. We have games and face painting and things like that that happens. But the actual Easter egg hunt is at 10 o'clock. And we won't start ahead of that time.
Right, right. I went last year, and a couple of observations that I had. One is how many children were there. It mm-hmm. was just a mind-boggling how many kids you had there. But what was really cool is those people in the purple shirts. It's just the volunteers that were helping the little guys, and you know, you have it broken up into the different age groups, so the littlest ones, you know, get to have fun and so forth. Gets a little bit more competitive as it moves up the age groups, and the older kids are a little bit more competitive about getting as many eggs as they possibly can. But you have so many darn eggs, it's like everybody gets something. So it's really amazing.
It is amazing how the competitive, as you said, it is my granddaughters last year were in the first area, and they wanted to find eggs by a certain color. That wasn't how many. They were looking for certain colors. Right. And you go over where the sixth graders are, and it doesn't matter. The competition is how many eggs can right. I get. But it's just a great family fun time.
And the purpose of it is obviously is to build community and to give families an opportunity to engage in something to celebrate Easter and to celebrate why we're even doing this.
Yes, and what happens is we give every family a brochure that invites them to our Easter service, as well as just explain the significance of Easter. It is a free event. We don't charge. We do this just because we want to give back to our community and to moms and dads that's looking for something for their children. And it's just a way for us to serve our local community.
Right. And you said even this morning, Pastor Abel and a group of volunteers are out doing a few more door hangers to try and invite the community, especially in the Hispanic-speaking community, to come out and participate. So I live 6 miles from the church, and yet I got one of these on my door in my neighborhood. And so your evangelization in terms of getting volunteers out to the different neighborhoods is pretty powerful.
Well, we have door hangers that our staff designed, and it's an invitation on one side to the English service and the extravaganza, and on the flip side, it's an invitation to our Spanish service and, of course, the extravaganza. And we've literally had hundreds of our members walking streets, just inviting mm-hmm. people to church, non-confrontational, where, you know, there's some people that aren't interested in that. And there's some doors that say no trespassing. We right. don't put the door hangers on those. But we just want people to know if they don't have a church, they're invited. If they have children and they don't have plans tomorrow, that bring their children. And again, we're just trying to give back to our community.
You know, I think that's so important. You know, running for mayor, I made no bones about the fact that, you know, we need to bring some civility back to our discourse, and we need to bring some Christianity, if you will, back to governance and so forth. And not that it's that anyone's intentionally trying to do that, but I feel that our, you know, we need to get back to some values that are pretty important. And family is one of those really important values that I think we as citizens of a democracy and as citizens of a community like Tucson, we need to really place some value in that. And your congregation exemplifies this.
Well, we, Tucson Baptists, don't give the hope. It's Jesus who gives right. the hope. And so what we're trying to do is just introduce people to Jesus Christ, and he's the one who makes the difference in our lives, and he's the one who makes us want to give back to our community, want to be a blessing to our community so that others can experience that as well. And we always have visitors, either whether it's on Easter Sunday or the 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 Sundays after that, as a result of our Easter egg hunt. And, and again, it's just so that they can experience in both Spanish and English the warmth of our ministry.
Right. You know, there's a term hatched, matched, and dispatched, which mm-hmm. is, you know, that the people get baptized, people get married, and then people die and want to have a service in the church. In my view, I'm sure in your view too, that's good, but we also need people that are practicing their faith on a more regular basis and finding a place that they're comfortable with, and whether it be your church or any other church, just I call it, you go to the big box, or you go to Danny Sawaya's place and you work out and you get your body in shape. You need to get your spiritual, you got to keep your spiritual life in shape too. And you got to do things, that reading and being around people that that challenge your thoughts and so forth. But also going to church gives you that community base, which we so desperately need, I think, in our community.
Absolutely. The Bible says iron sharpens iron. So you want to hang out with those people that can sharpen you spiritually and sharpen you with your family and in your marriage. And that's what Tucson Baptist is all about, is we're here to reach families. And I would just encourage people, if you don't have a church home, you're invited, and you come and feel that warmth and feel that love right. that you even started this show with, is we want to do that.
Right. Well, Pastor Brent Armstrong, and to you and your wife, happy Easter to you. And we look forward to seeing as many kids and families as we can tomorrow at Reed Park for the Easter Egg Extravaganza. And we appreciate what you do in the community.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to Jump in Tucson. General Ted Maxwell will be here tomorrow, and we'll be here on, I'll be here on Monday, and General Ted Maxwell will be here on Tuesday. So thank you for listening to Jump in Tucson.